go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. My book, The Cognitive Rampage, A Scientific Approach to Self-Discovery, Change, and Life Optimization, is now available on Amazon. Search The Cognitive Rampage, and you'll find the second edition there, as well as the Kindle version as well. And we're live. Hope everybody's doing all right. What's up, brother?
Not much, man. It's glad it's fucking Friday.
Oh, I'm telling you, when you first showed up here too, I was like, oh, it's Friday.
It is. It has been one hell of a week.
Yeah, when you chat into the mic sometimes, you'll want to talk like this, but you actually got to caress it, like right in here on the side of it.
Nice and sweet, right in front.
Yeah, that's it. You put it kind of right on the side. It's some people want to talk here, right? And you just got to be a minute.
It'll bear light.
That's it. That's it. I try to get most people on it when I tell them that in the beginning, and mostly people will be like, I swear it's Barry White. 9 times out of 10 people will, welcome to Late Night Radio, ladies. How's everybody doing? So, oh, it is Friday. I hope everybody actually is out there hanging out and chilling, man. But you were telling me you were dealing with like some major shit, wishing you weren't you this weekend.
Oh,
this
dear week. God. Oh, dear God. In my daytime, I am, they call me Mr. Wizard. I'm an engineer for Mitsubishi Power Systems here in Orlando. And anything and everything chemistry related is my job. And
so wait, a chemist, an engineer. Didn't you say rocket science one? Science?
Yeah. Yeah, let's give you the bullet points here.
Okay.
Ex-Navy.
Oh, shit.
Navy nuke.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's scary, dude. What do you know?
Chemist. Degreed theologian.
Holy shit.
Former rocket scientist. Engineer.
What the fuck? Wow.
Yeah, that's just like the high level view. That's 30,000 feet.
So is working on nukes make you go theological?
You know what? Yeah, to be perfectly honest, it did.
No shit. I was just throwing it out there.
No, I'll tell you the story.
I'm listening.
I worked there for 15, 16 years, and I was really damn good at what I did. Working with explosives and pyrotechnics and warheads and all that shit.
I'm scared, bro.
And
you were like them. You were part of them building bombs and stuff.
Yeah. And I was really good at it.
That's scary, dude. I'm sorry if I ever did anything. I'm going to like check my under my car and shit now. No shit. What's that like, dude? What the fuck, man? That sounds like such a moral dilemma, man. That's what you're about to tell me.
Yeah, it is. And for a long time, I worked safety systems, ejection seats, canopy lifters, airbags. But because I was so good, I started getting pulled into a lot of the offensive Defense Department stuff and was working on a program on a new warhead. And actually, shown on, was that Super Weapons or whatever that is with that really short dude that...
It was like a television show. I don't watch TV. So it's like, is it like one of those reality show things?
Yeah, it was
things?
On Discovery or Learning or something like that.
Yeah.
And we were sitting in an all-hands meeting. And that we had some unclassified footage from the war in Iraq. Yeah. And it was our stuff being used, stuff that I had worked on and developed. And they fired it in to a building, leveled like 3 floors.
Oh,
excuse me. And they kicked in that damn Toby Keith song. Yeah. We're going to put a boot in your ass. And everybody got up and cheered. And I was sitting in my chair and I go, I can't fucking do this anymore.
Oh, my God, dude.
And it was at that point that I broke. I'm like, I have to get out. And that began the search looking for an escape hatch. I started studying theology a lot more. I always kind of walked. I grew up Catholic and it was non-denominational, which is, you know, it's just Baptist with a fancy website. And I did a stint as a youth pastor for a while.
Yeah.
And decided that's when I needed to get out. And so we started looking and.
Holy dude, I can't imagine sitting there watching that shit, man. Like, what's funny is I went down the theological road for a while when I broke out of my
selling dope and robbing dope boys and doing all that crazy nightclub shit. My snap was there too. Like I went there and I'd studied for a while. I was ready to head that way and really walk down the path. And then I was like, no.
Yeah.
Is that so same kind of idea that moral break?
Yeah. And it still haunts me and it's going to for a while.
Yeah.
We were watching the Vietnam film this week on PBS, which is,
Pull that mic right up to you.
It's an excellent piece of work from Ken Burns. It's just like, you watch it and I go, God, I did that for 15 years.
Fuck.
And so, even though, I wasn't there firing them.
Right.
I supplied it.
Yeah.
And that's just tough to get over.
Well, I like the fact that, a guy as your level of intelligence did wake up, see that, and now they don't have you on the team, which is good. But I mean, let's face it, right? If it's not you, it's somebody else, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's somebody else as smart, as creative, as unique, as driven, as talented. Because I came in with just knowing what I knew in the Navy. I started, it was 96, I think, when I first got hired there. Making $850 an hour. I was married to my first wife, one kid, making, $17,000 a year doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And busted my ass to prove myself, because I knew I could do it. I knew I was smart. I knew I had the talent.
How much of that, the Navy training in the beginning kind of shapes you to be like that mind frame of like you're saving lives or how, I don't know what that's
true. A ton. And it's, you got that Navy mindset, that attention to detail, do the job. You go in and you do the best you can and you're doing it for the greater good or whatever have you.
Is that how that's kind of in the training and all through that, that's kind of how they pitch it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
And honestly, I enjoyed my time in the Navy. I loved it. I'm still buddies with a lot of buddies of mine I was on the ship with, I was in boot with.
Yeah.
There's a buddy of mine in North Carolina. We chit chat all the time. And I really enjoy, I miss the people. I don't miss being out to sea, working five and dimes, five on, 10 off.
Oh, what's that like, man? I mean, I'm a fisherman. I spend a lot of time in boats, but not like that.
Oh, it's.
Were you on a sub too?
Yeah, I did training on a sub.
Hell no, I'd lose my fucking mind. I'm claustrophobic as shit.
I thought so too. But once you get in there and you're kind of working and you're just kind of, doing your job, you don't really notice.
Yeah.
But of course I was a chemist basically. And so we had our own tiny little lab on the sub. And we can go in and lock the door and just kind of golf for a few hours. And we'd cook burritos on the hot plate and people go, yeah, damn ELTs, what the hell are you doing? Oh, nothing, chief.
Yeah. So I can see some memories, right? Yeah. That camaraderie when you really link. I mean, that's a lot of it for sports, for people, right? For even the workplace where they're at, right? That's you link with it. You miss that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. There's, cause it's, you're all in it together. Mm-hmm. You're all tied into this thing and, you're going through it together and you're growing together and you're working together and you're struggling together. And, you're all out in the middle of the, in Atlantic Ocean together, just playing cards and working five and dimes. And then next thing you're in drills or what have you. And it's just this whole thing that you do together. And there's a great camaraderie about it. And when people talk about, when I divest a little bit here in the veterans issues, because it's really close to my heart. Yeah, I'm sick, quite honestly, sick and damn tired of people using us as, exploiting veterans for their own political footballs.
Mm, that's right. It's almost like a repetitive statement that every politician says, right? Support the troops, right? It's the constant thing of how they say it and they use it for that.
Yeah. And, and people, this whole, I watched the thing you talked about, the kneeling at the NFL games and everything else. And it's like, it's an insult to veterans. And it's like, what's an insult? It's the insult is not doing anything about the 22 of us a day that take our own lives.
Fuck God. If you,
22 a day of my brothers and sisters who just get, I can't take it anymore. And that's it.
Yeah.
22 families.
That's a, thank you for bringing that angle up. I left that part out, but for sure being there, knowing that many, I mean, that's crazy, man. Even the addiction facilities I worked at, veterans were packed. I'd say almost half of what I was dealing with on a constant caseload.
Yeah, I mean, they're great at, there's a kind of a belief that, they're great at sending us off to war, but when we come home, we're just kind of like tossed aside.
Yeah, man. My friend, I'll leave his name out, but my very good friend who I love, what's up, Theorem? we met in geometry. We were nicknamed Theorem and Postulate. We just yell it out across the room at each other. you know, but he went through, he told me tons of stories. We just stay up having some late night drinks or, you know, hanging, and some of his stories about that coming home, you know, but that angle too, I can't believe I left that part out, really talking about the real disrespect is, you know, fuck, kneel, stand up, it's your right, it's your freedom, that's what you do, but really help us the fuck out that actually have lost so much.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the people that have lost limbs and are struggling with PTSD, I mean, veteran homelessness is a huge problem, and God bless the VA. They take care, you know, they take good care of me.
Once you get in there, they'll take care of you.
You know, I get a decent pension every month. It's not too bad because I got sick when I was in the Navy. But man, it is still a mess. And, you know, it's just sad. It makes me sad. This willingness to exploit veterans in the military to promote some sort of political bullshit agenda. And it's just like, you know, just come talk to us, you know, ask us what we think. Don't just say it's, oh, you're disrespecting them. Oh, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see some veterans that have stood up and called it disrespect and that's their perception on it. And, you know, I'll own anybody's right to the perception of it. You know, my truth is, you know, the nationalism itself causes an issue. I mean, all the way across the country. I love you like I would love the next person and the other, and we put up artificial borders and we call it something. You know, borders are weird. They're not even there. We just kind of make them up. And maybe I'm too much of a hopeful optimist, right? That maybe one day we could all...
God love the hopeful optimist, man. without hope, there ain't nothing.
You're right, you know, because part of me is a heavy cynic. I mean, don't get it twisted. You know, I walk around and I'm like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? It's really hard for me to fight off the cynic part, and he'll come out every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
And like you, when I see, you know, there's so many more real problems. I mean, hell, just take all the people stranded in Puerto Rico right now that are fucked, and we're tweeting about kneeling or standing and all this. There's so much more to what's happening. You know what I mean? Why do you think people get caught up so much? Or it's like this fast flowing, I don't know, I'm seeing the ocean, right? Like the way the stream flows, or how fast, you know, a Gulf Stream or something's moving. Everything on the top's just moving real fast. And people seem to fall into that and just grab onto, you know, the anthem or, you know, what's going on. And they don't sink down into really, you know, what's going on beneath all that.
Because that's hard. That's difficult. It challenges their worldview. It makes them stand up and defend what they believe. Mm. And it's much easier to grab onto the surface bullshit and get involved in the social media pissing matches. And I'll be honest, I get involved in those too. And
yeah, I've been guilty.
Yeah, you know, I'm guilty. But it's much easier to do that than actually face the problem. It's like, you know, the whole thing's been turned into, it's, you know, it's a protest to the anthem and the flag. It's like, no, there's a much deeper issue with injustice and inequality. But that's harder to face because you have to admit then you're part of the system. You're part of the thing that perpetuates it. And you got to take responsibility for your actions. And I think a lot of people today don't like to do that. They like to, it's you. It's the liberals. It's the
them.
Conservatives. It's, you know, it's the immigrants. It's the Muslims. It's, you know, whatever. And it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. And it's easy. Well, I mean, and you're not talking out of your ass because you did the shit. You had to face your values and look at what the work was doing. I mean, and made that split. So you're not just sitting here saying it. You really had to face it after putting in a career. You know what I mean? This was your camaraderie, the people, all that, and being able to sit there. I think you were talking about it. Was that the day that when you saw that video in Iraq, was that the day where it was just, I'm fucking done?
Yeah, that was the day. And, you know, everybody got up and cheered when that damn song came on. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And that was the break. And from that point forward, I was like, okay, I need to figure out a way out. I need to change industries, change careers. You know, I love what I do. I love being a chemist. I'm a damn good engineer. But I can't be a part of something that kills people anymore. Mm. And so... God, I don't even remember when that was. It's just all been a blur. But over the next little bit, you know, I got to go to Hawaii, got to sit at Bob Proctor's feet and learn from him for a day. We got back from Hawaii, and I remember we were driving and just decided, you know what? Let's move to the beach.
Yeah.
You know,
let's get
out of the desert and let's move to the beach. You know, I'd been looking for a little bit, and I had to tweak my resume here and there to kind of, you know, fit the buzzword so it didn't get filtered out in the algorithms.
That's what I found was weird. We were talking out back there before we came on, and I just moved back from Arizona. And then you're like, yeah, I moved here from Arizona. I'm like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up there. I went to high school, Mesa High School, class of 89, Jackrabbit Sue, Purple and Gold. Woo!
So. Jackrabbit. That's fucking funny. Yeah. I don't think you'd ever name anyone in Florida Jackrabbit. Although I have seen manta ray. And I was a coach, actually, Marco Island manta rays, you know, but man, so both moved back from Arizona. I'm interrupting you. I just thought that shit was funny.
This is absolutely free form. Let's kick the tires and light the fires and let it fucking burn.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then, tweak the resume, whatever. And I walk into my office one morning and, I see a new thing pop up on Career Builder for a job out here in Florida. And it's like, well, that's where I decided to move. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll send my resume off. This is the best part of the story. 10 minutes later, I get a phone call.
Ten minutes?
Yeah. Said, okay, we want to do a phone interview. I'm like, okay. Well, when do you want to do it? How about tomorrow? Okay.
Yeah, so, you're in.
So Tuesday, I do the phone interview, get done. They call me back Wednesday, said, well, they want to fly you out for in person. I'm like, okay. When? How about Friday?
They're moving.
They said, we'll fly you out Thursday night, put you up, do the interview on Friday, and fly you back on Friday. I'm like, okay. So I fly out Thursday night. Wake up Friday morning sick as a fucking dog. Somebody on the plane had the flu or something. So I wake up, I got a fever, I'm sweating.
That always bothers me. And now I'm probably a dick for saying it, you know what I mean? But like when you're on the plane and you hear the person, you know, and I'm going, you're the reason movies like Outbreak happened.
No shit.
You know what I mean? You're the reason Ebola came to fucking Detroit. You know what I mean? And it's hard, right? I don't want to be an asshole, but I'm really like, yeah, I'm going to die now.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I want to get some sort of, Ebola fungu, and it's like I'm going to end up dead in 12 hours.
Like, what kind of selfish fuck do you got to be knowing, like, especially if you know you have, like, the flu, right? Yeah. And you're like, I'm going to go hop in a metal plane 30,000 feet with a bunch of people in a little tube and try not to cough and make everyone sick.
And, you know, it's 5.5-hour flight or whatever from Phoenix to here, so.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, shit. So I get up, drink some coffee, some orange juice, get a bottle of water. 8 hours of interviews, sweating like a bitch.
8 hours?
Yeah, 8 hours. Everybody from some of the engineers I work with all the way up to the general manager.
Now, was there like the one guy who was like the brainiac of everything, who's dropping the verbiage and all the acronyms testing you?
There was a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah.
But I had studied up because
I'm engineers.
A smart guy like that.
It's you fucking engineers. You sit there and go, oh, you talk well, but then they drop 7 acronyms on you and loop it back to something. It's to like, see.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Awesome, but that's awesome. So you're like the smart dude going, really?
Yeah, bring it.
All right. 8 hours. Jesus. Yeah,
so fly home. I get weekend goes by. Walk into my office Monday morning, 7:05, my phone rings. We want to make you an offer. I'm like, okay, what's the offer? Well, it's this, and we'll pay relocation and all that. And I go, well, yeah, I got to talk to my wife first. Hung up the phone. I called my wife and said, yeah, we're moving. So,
and it was to Orlando.
Yeah. And so that was 5 years ago. And we joke about the time period between the time I left my last job and the time I started here is our 2 weeks of being unemployed and homeless.
Yeah.
We had no idea where we were going to live and no idea where we were going to stay when we got to Orlando. So we're driving and thank God for smartphones. We're driving through Texas and we're looking on VRBO and it's like, okay, there's a condo in Kissimmee that's available for a week. All right. So let's get that. Did that, stopped in Houston at a Kinko's, signed the paperwork, scanned it, sent it in, sent them the money. So it's like, we got a place to stay when we get to Florida. Awesome.
Dude, that's, man, our stories are eerily similar. It's creepy. I mean, Patricia and I drove across, first drove there and then 6 months out in Arizona or whatnot. And then we drove back across the country. Now we were driving the same through Texas and
I'd rather cut my own leg off than do that again.
It forever. It just goes
on. 860 some odd miles down I-10.
Dude, thank God my brother, he shoots me a couple ZZ Top, you know, my head's in Mississippi. So I'm playing a couple on repeat, right? We're just flying. But man, driving through Texas, we had to drive around Harvey, showed up and then landed at Irma.
Oh, good God.
Not knowing if really the house was secure yet. We hadn't seen it. So like just driving across like you going, well, and now the funniest part is we were buying furniture as we were driving across the country. So I converted her to a minimalist. And so we dumped most of the shit that we needed. We're like, fuck it, whatever fits in the car, the dog's in the car and let's ride. And we just drove across, man. And fuck the stories. Holy shit.
Oh,
it's crazy, isn't it?
Well, hell, when they sent me the check for relocation, we had the movers at and said, okay, come estimate all of this stuff, and they're like, I got this much, and they're charging me this much. I'm like, I don't even know where we're gonna live. Let's get rid of everything except like the bedrooms. And so we sold it all off. So it was basically the bedrooms that we came out here with.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. I don't even remember if we came out with a couch or not.
So we came with nothing.
So you know, we brought our washer and dryer. You know, we sold the, God, I miss my stove. We had one of those dual stoves with the small one. I love that thing. But we sold everything out before we came out here. We came out with the bare minimum. And
it's, for us, it was whatever fit in the two cars. If it doesn't fit, it stays.
Oh, we came out here. It was my oldest stayed back because she was a senior in high school, so she wanted to finish her senior year back in Arizona.
Yeah.
So it was. Dude, it was. Us
wait. My daughter was starting her senior year.
You gotta be getting.
And I can't miss it, so I have to be back. So I came back because of her senior year here in Orlando.
Oh man!
What the fuck?
No shit.
Yeah, it's creepy.
It is creepy.
It's weird.
Yeah, and so she finished out there, and my two girls are now in college. But yeah, we came out here with my son, my stepson, my wife, my son, and my middle daughter. You know, we call her the middle one because you know she now fits in the middle. She's she's the cream in the Oreo sandwich, the meat in the sandwich. And, so it was,
and that's not a racial remark, people.
No, nope.
And if you thought it, you're a racist.
That's right. So it was the four of us and two cats.
Damn, wait, driving. I thought it. This it was fuck.
It was the four of us, two cats, and a minivan driving out here, basically.
I love it, man. For me, my foot down was going, I'm not driving a fucking U-Haul 4 days across the United States.
Oh, God, no.
I'm not doing it.
No.
So no. For us, it was the same. We just dumped the stuff and came out, and that's what we were doing. And for one, I will never, ever buy new furniture ever again.
Oh, no.
Dude, driving across the shit, the fucking deals we got on the little thing like before it. And it was funny. My boy Kerry was here. He was on the podcast during the hurricane. He goes over and picks up some of the furniture we bought for us in a truck. And then we show up and we spend 2 days gathering furniture in a U-Haul. But that's the story, right?
Oh, yeah. There's on Facebook, where we live out in Avalon Park, there's an Avalon Park buy, sell, and trade. We furnished our house from that group. Some guy,
what's funny is Avalon Park is the last place I lived before I moved to Arizona. I shit you
this
not.
This is just creepy as hell.
My daughter still goes to Timber Creek.
Oh, my son goes to Timber Creek. He's a junior this year.
Oh, no. What's his fucking name?
Jake.
All right. I'm checking, man. I'm checking. That's man, what the weird, man.
I know. I honestly believe there's no such thing as coincidences.
Well, I mean, you took the shot. You just came up and said, hey, man. Hey, how you doing? You just said hello.
Yeah, I was talking to your compatriot, and he's like, oh, yeah, we do this. And I go, and I saw the shirt. And I'm like, well, what's it about? And he told me about the book and everything else. And
Steve.
Like, yeah, and I was like, he goes, what do you do? And I told him, and Steve's like, oh, you've got to go meet Adam. You've got to go up. I got to introduce you. And so we came up and introduced, and it's like, oh, yeah, we hit it off. And
dude, Steve's a shit.
A week and a half later, here we are sitting here drinking beers and shooting the shit.
Yeah, and I keep interrupting about the story, driving across, moving, picking the place.
Oh yeah, it was insane. And for me, being an engineer, I've always been very analytical. I got to have everything planned out. But that period was like it was like an awakening for me. Kind of that I realized to let go of everything, and I was okay with being unemployed and homeless. I mean, I came out on a 90-day contract.
So but they didn't even give you a year guarantee. You're talking 90 days.
Yeah. But, I figured they paid for me to move, so they were going to keep me anyway. I really had a good feeling about it. And it was
dude, this is a nightmare for a guy like you.
Yeah.
For an engineer, analytical mind to just throw your entire life up, leave all your shit, drive on a 90-day contract. You had to be losing your fucking mind.
You know what? I would have.
Yeah.
If it was like a decade ago before I got dragged to my first personal development event. Mm. But since then it was like,
I like how you said a drag to my birth.
Oh yeah. 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 My wife was working with a coach and I'm going to them and she's like, oh, you gotta go. You gotta go meet these people. And I'm like, no, it's a bunch of woo woo bullshit. I don't buy it at all.
Yeah. Right. Goes, find your purpose.
And okay. She goes, well, I really want you to go. She goes, we got this, it's a weekend event. I think it would be great for you. And I'm like, I'll tell you what. I said, you find a way to pay for my ticket. I'll go.
Just the bargaining.
3 days later.
Damn it,
she
man.
She shows up with a piece of paper. You're going. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Got you. Come on, man. You could have laid a better Rubik's Cube on her than that one.
But it was a 3 day. It was a 3 day thing that changed everything for me.
Really?
Yeah. The guy studied under Richard Bandler.
Okay.
And so he's...
What's his name? Who was it?
Michael Burnoff.
Okay.
He works Human Communications Institute in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Ah, shout out to all you rich people in Scottsdale.
Yep. And so he studied NLP and language and all that stuff in hypnosis and all that goes into it. And so I go and they're like, oh, you know, it's going to be involved and do, you know, get involved. And I'm like, well, I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb. So I'm just going to kind of play kind of medium.
Yeah.
And then the first day they go, well, you got to find an accountability partner. I'm like, I don't fucking think so. I mean, I got to go talk to somebody.
You're the analytical chemist, engineer guy.
I'm just here to kind of observe and like I said, I don't believe in coincidences.
Okay.
And met a guy just like me. He actually flies the 747 for the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, nice.
He's been popping back and forth to Puerto Rico the last few days, dropping off supplies from, you know, Mark Cuban and all that.
Awesome. Helping people out.
And so I met him and we got along really well. And throughout the weekend, I started getting more and more involved. And he started talking about the science behind it, the science behind language and retraining your neural pathways and mirroring and matching and pacing and leading. And I was like, there might be something to this.
We'll walk. I know exactly what you're talking about, but if you would walk people through, right, that aren't there, what you mean about the pacing and walk through it.
Yeah. Basically, pacing and leading is kind of almost like the kind of the three truths and a lie kind of a thing is the way I look at it. Is if someone's talking to you and makes some observations that you know are true, you three in a row, on the fourth one, your brain, no matter what they say, your brain thinks it's true.
Damn.
So like, you know, you and I are sitting here in front of the microphones in front of this room and it's, you know, and then whatever I would say after that, your brain would automatically assume it's true because you've got those micro...
That's how you get people with this thing. Hey, man. You got something right here.
Yeah.
You just rub a couple of times and they start going, what? Yeah. What's on my face, man?
Yeah. And mirroring and matching is you mirror people's actions. You mirror their body language. You match their tonality, their cadence and everything else. And so and their brains go, oh, they're like me. I like them. So there's a lot to do with persuasion and there's a lot all up here. The way the other people perceive you, if you can persuade people to drop their guard, you are more likely to make a connection with them.
Well, through vulnerability, right?
Through vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because they think you're like, you know, you're like them and they automatically have some sort of, you know, affection for you. They like you. There's some connection there. And so you can work forward with that.
Yeah. That scares me though. You know, you ever been around that one person that
you
like,
can use it for evil, guaranteed.
Yeah. Well, you haven't even really said anything to the dude. Or whoever it is, and they look at you, and then they drop like the most vulgar or racist shit, and you're looking at them, you're like, well, I didn't know we were that close. You know what I mean? You're like, who the fuck? Like, what the hell did I put off that made you just look at me and say some shit like that?
It's like, dude, rapport broken.
Yeah, like we're good now.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go and talk to this guy over here.
Exactly.
But I learned all that stuff and started learning the science behind it, learning it, you know, and it was like, okay, well, there's something to this. It's not just all, you know, the Stuart Smalley, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me, which is what I thought it was.
Right. Well, of course, I attack a lot of those dudes that just say shit that sounds good, motivational fluff,
you know,
the secret, if you will, if you just manifest it, it'll show up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay. And then I started practicing some of it with the people I worked with. I would match their pace when they walked. And I noticed I could get people to match my pace when I walked. I could get, you know, once we're kind
you
of
started
rapport,
fucking with people, didn't you?
No, it's just practicing. just seeing if the shit was real.
You're fucking with people,
and
man.
And I'd be talking with people and we'd be walking and then we'd be in rapport and I'd stop and they'd stop. I'd cross my arms and they'd cross their arms. And so I'm like, holy shit, this shit works.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, maybe all this nonsense, you know, it's not all woo-woo shit. There's something to the power of communication. There's something to the power of language. Ugh. Goodness, mango wheat.
Yeah, mango wheat, Belgian beer.
Yes. And so I started digging into it and I started learning how to retrain my own neural pathways, started learning how to change the emotions I had attached to events, like you were talking about the other day.
Yeah, Grace hears you too.
Yeah, hey Grace. and from then it was, you know, from a decade ago now, you know, so it got to the point I'm doing that all the time and all the time and all the time that when it came to be unemployed and homeless for those 2 weeks, I was like, fuck, this is great. I'm okay with this. You know, I know things are going to work out okay. No matter how they work out, it's going to be fine. I'm going to land on my feet. I may stumble and, you know, skin my knees and bust my nose, but I'm always going to land on my feet, because any day that I wake up on the right side of the dirt is going to be a good day.
Mm.
You know, no matter what happens, you know, and I have bad days, but I don't live there anymore. I visit them and then I get out.
I like how you say you visit them and say, yeah, all right, yeah, we're here. We had a good time. I'm leaving tomorrow.
Yeah. You validate the emotions you're feeling. You validate the shit that you're going through, and you're like, okay, I'm done with that. You know, you accept it and go, okay, I'm having a shitty day. I'm stressed, but
that's where most people screw up, is that they'll validate it quick, right? I'm depressed. I'm having a shitty day. Fuck everybody. Fuck me.
Yeah.
Right. They'll validate it. But that part to go, I'm done with it now, and I'm moving beyond that is where people struggle, I think.
It's like, okay, I'm facing all this shit. I got all these challenges. Okay. And people go, oh, I got all this crap to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I've gotten to a point studying all this stuff and learning and growing and all, where it's like, okay, now what's the solution? How do I go forward?
Well, that's your mind too, right? Is you look at the problem, you look at the mechanics, look at the chemistry, study and go, all right, well, what's the solution here?
But I used to, but because I'm an engineer and being analytical,
yeah,
I used to sit in that everything sucks and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Oh.
Used to study it and study it and study it and study it and stay there in that analytical mindset. And then getting to the point where you get to the, where you take the action, where you're like, okay, it's time to move forward and do something about it.
Yeah.
That was the part that I had to learn.
Was it trying to learn what to do about it? Because, you know,
it was learning to do something, to finally go, okay, I don't have to think about it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Any decision I make, if it doesn't turn out the way I like it, I can always make another one. And it was getting to that point. Burnoff used to talk about everybody has four personalities.
Hmm.
Let's see if I can remember what they are. One was the people pleaser.
Sure.
Two was analytical. Three was the doer. And four was the fucking psycho. Yeah. The spontaneous one, the one that, you know, runs around with Mach 2 with his ass on fire.
Yeah.
And I would get stuck in two in the analytical. And so, and growing up the way I grew up, I was also much of, I was always the peacemaker. So I was a very people pleaser kind of a person, whatever keeps the peace and makes everybody happy. I don't like conflict, and just please don't yell at everybody.
That builds up over time.
Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I'm still trying to apply, you know, I mean, to say, you know, obviously there's no science behind proving the four personalities, right? That they exist. I mean, right. I did a group one time in a addiction clinic where I talked about the type of person that comes to rehab. And I walked through and I kind of came up like that with certain personalities, this person and that person. And I just wanted to see at the point if I could sell that idea. And for the most part, people are going, yeah, yeah, that's this person or that person. And this person or that person. Grace loves to be on the mic too. Yeah, they were going to keep barking if I didn't know. Look at her trying to get on the mic.
Hi, Grace.
Look at you.
Oh.
Grace on camera now.
Yep.
If you're not watching now.
Good
Gracie,
girl.
Come here, baby. And, you know, to just kick her down, man. She's a bully.
Daddy says down.
Get down, baby. Get down. Careful. We do anything on camera like this, we're going to get letters.
You dog beat her.
Right? But it probably will. But that idea, right? I mean, I guess I'm open to whatever reaches. Yoke her down. Grace, are you kidding? Come on, baby.
All right.
You're holding the mic yourself. Come on.
Baby. All right. Come on. Yeah, he's going to take Grace out. Yeah, there's not really a whole lot of science behind the actual division of personalities, but it's more of like character traits.
Yeah,
you can look at it that way.
Well, I thought for me, if you know, if you're trying to pull somebody out of a snake pit, right? I mean, wherever they're at, if you can at least, you know, reach them in a certain way, working that in the facility, I had to explain things in five different ways. You know what I mean? I'd say it this way, then this way, and this way. Maybe by the fourth or fifth, somebody, you know, the most of the group was going, oh shit.
You know what I mean? Oh yeah. And you know, and that gets into communication styles, you know, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and all that sort of stuff.
Now, is that true?
Absolutely.
Now,
I
had a guy on here, Dr. Bobby Hoffman, right? Him and I don't talk much anymore. We'll just leave it at that. But anyway, he was on here and he's a professor at a university. And he argued that it's a myth that there's no such thing as a visual, audio, all of these learners. He goes, that's a myth. And is that there were a mix of all of them at certain times. And he knocked it all down. And mind you, he who draws last wins, right? I used Absolutely. To say that in football. It's like, all right, if I draw a play and you draw the defense, well, yeah, you're going to win or reverse it. But he would say that, okay, if you say you're an audio learner, then I'm going to teach you geography just by telling you and not showing you anything. You don't get it, right? So if you're visual but not audio, I'm just going to write a bunch of algebraic equations, and then you therefore should learn algebra because, well, I told
it
to
you. You can see it, yeah.
Right. And he's saying, but you can't hear anything. You could just see it, and then since you're a visual learner, you should then be able to learn algebra just by watching me work the board, or geography just by hearing me.
That's a very simplistic way of looking at it, and I think that's why he...
Was he drawing last?
Yeah, I think he was drawing last. It's... visual, yes, you do tend to process more information more visually through what you can see, but it also relates to how you describe the world. And if you want to know how somebody communicates, and there's a really easy way, you kind of ask them to describe their ideal scene or some memory, and you listen to the words that they use. Do they talk about colors or light and dark, or they talk about sounds? Or do they talk about how things feel? And that gives you an insight of how they communicate. And visual communicators are usually the more louder, obnoxious, in-your-face type.
Shit, I knew I was visual.
Yeah. Audio, like me, we're kind of in the center. We're more deliberate with our words. Cadence is a little bit slower. Drives people nuts because I tend to look for the right word to use. And so I'll be in the middle of a sentence and I'll be like... I've done it a couple of times tonight where I'm like, what's that fucking word? I'm looking for.
Meanwhile, I just blurt it out and then I'll repeat it and say it five times. Hopefully I said it right one of those five times. I got you.
Kinesthetics are very reserved and they're very far talkers. They don't like anybody close to them. Visuals are more in your face.
Yeah. See, because ever since he came on the show and said that, we were actually writing a book together and that didn't work out. And ever since then, because I've always saw myself, or I say always, right? I've seen myself as a visual learner, you know, and he would argue, well, you've been told that since you were a kid. So, you know, and it did gear me certain ways to where they would say, okay, let's not focus on math and you need to do this and not, and my grammar, right? They always bash me. I shouldn't write, right? Maybe you should do something with your hands. You know what I mean? And then I'm like, bitch, I done wrote two books. You know what I mean? And I'm like, if somebody would have just said, if you work at it, and his argument is if you, whatever you feed gets better. So if you work at something, you know, you get better at the writing or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we all have our strengths and weaknesses and you know, I love listening to Gary Vee. Mm. Yeah, and he goes value strengths over weaknesses, which I agree to a point.
I hate that guy.
I think you can.
I guess that's a strong word. I say I hate the guy. I don't hate the guy. I actually did a whole video on Gary Vee. Actually,
I'll have to catch that one because I listened to him. I think he's got a lot of good things to say. I think he's very kind of like he's a no fucks given kind of a guy, and yeah. I resonate with that now.
Sure,
not so much years ago, but now it's like.
He's a little too fuck the world. I'm fucking amazing. Do what I do.
Yeah, he does have a piece that of bit shit. To him.
You know what I mean? I'm kind of like, dude, honestly, I don't want to be your life at all. Like, not even in the slightest.
I know. I watch him. He works, you know, like 400 hours a day and he's traveling here and there. And it's like, no, I like to sleep.
Yeah, I like to go fishing.
I may wake up at 7 o'clock on the weekends because I'm going to be 45 and I just can't sleep in anymore. But I do like to sleep. I'm, you know, I like to relax. I like to chill. I like to work and I like to chill. There's got to be a balance, and it's got to be a balance where you're kind of back and forth. Because if you achieve complete balance, you're not going fucking anywhere.
Yeah.
It's no motion, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think the whole work-life balance is bullshit. But back to strengths versus weaknesses.
Yeah.
I think that's great to focus on your strengths in the beginning, but you also have to work on your weaknesses. So, you know, mine was, I'm great at the written word. You know, I learned how to podcast from a guy named Sam Crowley. Every day is Saturday, who, by the way, Sam, because I know you're going to see this, God bless you and your family and baby Susan. Baby Susan was born like way premature, like 1 pound. And
welcome to the world, baby Susan.
Had a trach and had just actually had the trach removed this last week.
She's a fighter.
After 3 years, she's
wow.
breathing Holy on her shit. Own, and it's an amazing story. I mean, they didn't expect
baby Susan the last 12 hours, and it's 3 years later, and she's adorable little girl.
I love it when people defy the odds, even as infants, man.
Oh yeah. But yeah, you know, he resonated with me because he always talked about, and the first time I saw him, he talked about the gift of feedback.
Mm.
And I laughed, and he goes, "You know what I'm talking about."
Yeah.
And so I learned a podcast from him, and I got his course. And so I sat on it for a year. I didn't do anything. And I had all the equipment and everything. And I'm like, but you know, what if I talk and nobody listens?
Happens.
And so, yeah. And so it's like one day I was like, oh, the hell with it. And so the very first one I started, I would go with show notes, and they were horrible. Oh my God. It was almost like death by PowerPoint.
Oh.
And then I get to like the sixth show, and I was like, guys, I looked at it and I go, oh, fuck this. I'm just going off the top of my head.
That's how you do it.
And flew forward from there. And now, you know, I absolutely love it. It's one of my strengths. And now I'm kind of breaking into video, which is a weakness, but I'm going to work on that weakness using the strengths that I have, you know, written and podcasting and, you know, everything else I've learned to kind of balance where I'm weak. So to become a little bit more rounded.
I think a lot of people don't, you know, on the Tribe of Change, shout out to everybody in the tribe. Love y'all. You know, when they go live, I did a whole challenge, like just go live. And so I did a whole podcast talking about, look, if you're criticizing people that are going live, but you're not able to cut the camera on and do it, then you have no fucking idea.
To shut the fuck up.
Yeah. You don't know what it means. And a lot of the tribe members are like, we're in, and they all jumped in clicking up live videos. You know, Amanda or, Angela Bailey did one today, and she was one of the real nervous ones, you know, and to do that, once you realize the camera's on, dude, when I started this podcast way back and that I was doing live, I was zapping into that radio dude, whoever that guy is, like slash stripper DJ, you know, morning.
Next up on the stage is.
Yeah. I was like, welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. This is your host, Adam Lowry. Hope you're taking care of you. And I'm going, what the fuck? You know what I mean? And it was really hard. It took me a long time to be able to break the bullshit. Fuck guy. You know what I mean? Dude that's up there just talking like that. You know what I mean? It took a while to get off of that.
Yeah. And now I had, the new ones, the 21st Century Man. About that, because we were talking the other day about, you know, men don't know how to be men nowadays because we've got the hyper masculine, and then we've got the romp him wearing hipsters, and media portrays us as a bunch of doofuses kind of wandered around. And
well, yeah, dude.
It's no longer, you know, I'm Gen X. And so I see, you know, where my folks and my grandparents grew up, they worked, you know, a single job until they retired. And there was a certain ethic and a certain, you know, way of life. And I look at Gen Y and the millennials in front of me, and I'm like, you know, I read a thing in, what was it, Esquire? I think it was an Esquire not too long ago about how Gen X is going to save the world because we're hopeful but cynical at the same time. You know, we take the best of, you know, because the boomers were all hopeful about a better world. The millennials are very hopeful about a better world.
The boomers piss me off. Yeah. I have to be honest. I'm good. They're not my major demographics. So they're the smaller percentage of people that listen to me. But they pissed me off. And they pissed me off for a few reasons, because in the 60s and the late, they were the last, they almost did it. You know, they were starting this revolution. They ended Vietnam at a point. They almost did it. And then all of a fucking sudden, that's who put on the damn suits. They were all the hippies. They almost did it. They were pushing for change. They were, I mean, it was bad back then. I mean, when they were hijacking colleges. Shit was legit. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like I was saying, talking about that Vietnam film on PBS, the Ken Burns thing. They talked about that a lot. And we were watching that going, you know, history doesn't repeat, but it sure as fuck rhymes.
Mm,
yeah. Fuck. Yeah. And there's a lot of parallels to the mid to late 60s to today with the insanity that's going on.
Yeah. But what made them, man? What made them go from the peace, you know, and then they're the 9-to-5ers. They became the ones that wore the ties, became the bankers.
I really don't know.
Like, did they have kids and just say, well, fuck it? Like, where'd they go?
I don't know. You know, and you know, I was, you know,
Mama D, I know you're still out there. Shout out to you, Mama D. I know you've been hippie from day one and will never change. Shout out to What You Want. If you're ever in Sedona, stop by What You Want.
Oh, love Sedona.
Yeah.
Love Sedona. But yeah, you know, I grew up, I was born in
72. So, you know, rolling into the 80s, the very, one of the first, big memories I have is watching, Dick Clark and, turning 79 to 80. And I think Blondie was the big act, but then, you know, the 80s come and it becomes the hip, goes from hippies to yuppies.
Mm-hmm.
And finance takes over, and it's all about money and commercialism. And actually, there's some studies out that show that the American economy switched from a producer to consumer during the 1980s.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And so a lot of that shifted.
What do you think caused that? I mean, because TV was out, marketing was out.
I think it was a lot of it had to do with the rise of cable TV in the early 80s, because, you know, I grew up and I had one of those, we had one of those giant ass TVs where you had to go up and push the button and everything.
Yeah. It's more wooden frame than TV.
Yeah. And we had six channels, and living in Detroit at the time before we moved to Arizona, we used to get, you know, Channel 9 CBC from Canada and watch those sorts of things. And I think with the rise of media and cable and technology, I think technology moved a lot faster than humanity was ready for.
Mm. And, I think we still are.
Oh, absolutely. And it became easy to make a lot of money and without dealing with the ethics behind it. And, you know, kind of switching back to Gary Vee, and I know you've got your challenges with him, and I do too. But one of the things he always stresses is it's not about the money you make, it's how you make it.
Hmm.
That's your legacy.
Hmm.
And so you look at today and you look at the exploitation of the environment and of workers and, you know, the death of the labor union. You know, my dad, when he first got married to my mom back in, you know, in 72, he was putting front seats in Chryslers, and he makes sure to tell you it's front seats, not back seats. The back seat people were, you know, they were the new guys. When he was putting front seats in Chryslers on the assembly line in Detroit, and you know, and unions got the challenges, no doubt about that. But they also allowed this country to move forward and people to kind of create a good life for them and their families. And starting with in the late 70s and the rise of finance and you know, and rolling from late Carter and early Reagan and kind of the squashing of the unions, and
yeah,
you know, that kind of went about the, you know, the wayside, because, oh, excuse me, God, man, I tell you,
beer do it.
Yeah, it does. You know, people talk about wages and stuff, and wages have been flat since, you know, what, 78 or so?
Yeah.
You know, they haven't kept up with inflation, and people said, oh, we're making more now. No, not really, compared to everything else. The cost of living is insane.
Yeah.
You know, and people in community, which is one of my big things, have the power to make the world a better place. You know, and it may not be for them, but it's for those that come after them, because we all stand on the shoulders of people who came before us.
John Campbell.
Yep.
I quoted him in the book, actually. Yeah. We stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah. I absolutely believe that. There's, you know, we learn from those who come before us, and we take the ball and we run with it. And it's our duty to hand it off further down the field than from where we got it.
It seems like we've been lateraling this motherfucker.
Oh shit. I mean, it is stalled, and it's because there seems to be a lack of ethic. And it's gotten worse over the last 30 years or so. It's become more inward focused than outward focused. You know, when it was unions and the rise of the middle class, and fuck, this conversation is going everywhere.
That's the point.
You know, it was all about creating neighborhoods and communities and a nation, you know, that rose out of the ashes of war to create better life for everybody going forward. But now it's so inward focused, and it's all about what I get. And you see it, and it's like, you know, anytime anybody does something for somebody else, there's always those whiny ass bitches that go, well, you know, why don't they do it for, you know, Americans or the veterans or what, insert what I like here.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't understand. You know, when you serve other people, when you go out and just do good, I mean, that commercial today that was on the Facebook page that somebody posted, the 3-minute commercial about the guy who just does good.
Oh, that Asian guy that's doing it. I can't lie. I teared up.
I did too. I mean, that that to me is everything. It's not about monetary or financial or any sort of physical rewards. It's just going out and doing, because this world has gotten so damn ugly lately. Yeah. You can't have a sane conversation. Social media makes it worse because of the power of anonymity. Everybody can just tell everybody to fuck off and not worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, and what you miss is the connection with other people. I can't remember who says it, but the easiest way to eliminate bias and eliminate bigotry is to travel, is to talk to other people, is to be in community with people around you.
Yeah.
And
that's some of the issue that I have with the speakers like Gary Vee and those guys, because it becomes about the self, and he may say it's about what you do and the legacy. And the cross for me has always been, you know, who's the seventh president?
Seventh?
Right. At one point, he was the most famous motherfucker. See, you got to count from the beginning.
Jefferson, Adams.
Yeah.
When I was a junior in high school, we had a song that we memorized to remember all the presidents.
He was the most famous at one point.
Yeah.
Right. And so to think that we leave some legacy for real that lasts for some long time. I mean, Cyrus the Great, for example, one of the greatest leaders of all time. Most people have no fucking idea who Cyrus was or is. And most of you heard he was Muslim on the other side, right? They would lose it. You know, so the idea of leaving a legacy or what you do, it becomes so caught up in this performance. And I think a lot of issue kind of wraps around today is our value really is based on how we perform, right? And as a father, as an ex-husband, right? And now as a boyfriend, there's these ideas to perform. And if we don't perform or provide, America's favorite word, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if we don't do that, then we don't have value, right? And so it becomes about these motivational speakers, about how you invest in business, how you grow your legacy, right? How you build this shit. And I'm kind of going, your legacy is really around your proximity. And after a while,
it's got a very narrow focus unless somehow you end up being, you know, having 3.5 million followers or things like that, where you impact a larger area. But I think if we focus on those around us and we focus on that very narrow focus of the people that are around us, you know, that we can leave something behind us, the way people talk about us when we're gone. Mm. You know, it's something simple as that. You know,
I got a feeling they're going to look back at us and be like, what the fuck? I think Joe Rogan says it, that they shoot each other and take pictures of their dicks. I mean, like that's the legacy we're leaving behind is Snapchat, sexting, free porn, and some crazy ammunition.
Oh, and everything is so goddamn over the top nowadays. Mm. There's no authenticity. There's nothing behind it. It's all about, there's a great book by Charlie Pierce called Idiot America, how stupidity became a virtue in the land of the free.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He writes for Esquire and I follow him on Twitter and he's hilarious. But he wrote this book about how the cranks, the insane, you know, the sandwich board guys, the end is coming people, they used to be on the periphery of society. But occasionally the cranks had a good idea and would drive society forward. But with the rise of cable and the 24-hour news cycle and everything else, it's now expertise is now measured in clicks, in units, and viewers, and ad revenue.
Awareness is the currency.
Yeah.
Or attention, I'm
attention
sorry.
Is. Attention is the currency. So now the crazier that you can be, the more attention that you can draw to yourself, the more of an expert you're seen as. And the worst thing to be now is an actual fucking expert in your field. Because... It really is. You know, it's like I said, I'm a degree theologian. I studied, I can read and write first century Greek. I mean, it's, you know, I've studied textual criticism. I've studied, you know, and it's all the things that go into understanding the basis of scripture and in Christianity and understanding the historical and social and economic culture of the times. And
I mean, how did you deal with the Horus thing? How did you deal with the zeitgeist, the horse thing, and trace the back? How did you cope with that mentally?
You know,
because that's I hit a crossroad. You know what I mean? When I started learning, I was like, what the fuck?
I think you understand that every culture has its own understanding of that sort of thing. And if you really dive deep and you understand that, and get a little bit deep here for a second, that God or the universe or whatever you want to talk about as some sort of other dimensional outside of our reality force being whatever, that everything you've seen in history and everybody's understanding of what the supernatural is how it was revealed to them. You know, you have in India, you have all the different representations of the aspects of God, you know, and I think if you try to put that understanding in any tiny box, you know, God is this, then you're creating an idol. You're not really understanding that, you know, we're just specks of dust whirling around on a blue marble in the middle of the vast emptiness of the world. And that the possibility exists that there is something much larger than us out there.
Man, you're pulling from thoughts I have a lot. Is we get so caught up in this plastic touchscreen world that we live in, of, well, whether it's television shows or pop culture or anything, that
pop culture bores me to fucking tears.
I agree, but it's this distraction that we think we're so much smarter than the universe. But when you get by all of the shopping, the movies, the fun, when you get by all that, you break it down, you really look, again, I'll quote Joe, is that we're just a bunch of monkeys spinning on a rock in space and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
But we get so, you know, diverted into what's important, what we do know, what we don't know, very arrogant in our own mind. And then you really look at this and go, are you fucking kidding me? Look at what is happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, you go back to the ancient Greeks and it says the wise man knows that he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
And I think once you get beyond the arrogance that you can think you can know everything, and being an engineer, and kind of my personality, I'm on this quest to know as much as humanly possible. And
I'm starting to think that it's an addiction.
It could very well be. I mean,
what was he say on Red Hot Chili Peppers song, getting high on information?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I'm always on the search for the answer to life, the universe and everything. And I know it's 42. And I've seen the meme about that, about what 42 means, and I can't remember for the life of me, but it makes me laugh every time I see it. But I think when you understand, you don't understand everything. Nor can you, but you seek to expand your knowledge and expand your mind and take in all these different viewpoints and all these different perspectives. It almost like levels the playing field. It makes you a lot more humble. You realize you're kind of just a person, and the best thing you can do is, you know, see, you know, to use a theological phrase, see the image of God in other people, regardless of who they are or where they come from, you know, and you know, whether they're, you know, they come across some imaginary line on a map, or they come from a different faith or a different ethnicity, they're still fucking people, man. Yeah. I think that kind of boils down to how everything is.
Yeah, we're
all just people kind of stumbling our way through things. And you know what? Yeah. We're all fucked up in our own special way. We're all just a friggin' hot mess. And as guys especially, the more we accept the fact that we're just a hot mess and we're not defined by what we do as a career, the better life will be.
Yeah, I've said it a million times to those that have kids, right? That they put on this act in front of their kids. They've got the answers. They got it figured out, right? They and the kid knows. The kid's like, yeah, right. And they play
kids can smell bullshit a mile away.
Oh, hell yeah. And they watch more what you do than what you say.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I used to think, I'm like, they're just scared little neurotic humans in the back room, just like us. You know what I mean? They're sitting there like, what the fuck is happening? You know what I mean? And when you look at it with that same idea, that the respect of, hey, man, we're just here. you know, and we don't know everything. We can't prove there is or isn't that or this, and some things we can, but we get so lost, I think, in that arrogance, man. We're blinded. I argued on one podcast even that if I were to tell somebody to imagine something, or if, could you imagine that your imagination is infinite? But what if I told you that even your imagination is held within a box, that even your imagination is framed and you can only imagine
so far?
That's right. And people would be like, wait, no, the imagination is open to anything. I'm like, no, it's not. But even if that's closed off and that's all we have, that's the only language, that's the only thoughts, that's the only thing we can do to try to construct something of what could be beyond our own understanding.
Yeah, the first time I went to the first time I met Burnoff, he does this thing in the on, I think it's on day one. He goes, all right. He goes, he's talking and he's kind of, you know, walking back and forth the stage, setting anchors and all that good stuff. And he goes, all right, I want everybody to raise your hand as high as you can. Everybody raise their hand. He's like, all right, how come none of you stood up?
Oh, shit.
How come none of you stood on your chairs?
He goes, not one person did?
He goes, all you thought that the highest you could raise your hand was by sitting in your chair.
That would wake you up.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm here to tell you that, you know, you got to look beyond your current circumstances, your current viewpoints, and understand that you can expand the way you think about everything by stepping up on a chair.
Just changing the dude.
Just changing your perspective.
I'll stand like, this is going to be weird. I'm putting myself out there, and wherever house I'm at, or sometimes if I've lived there long enough, or wherever I'm at, I'll just go stand in a weird place of the house, maybe up on a chair or something, and just stand there and be like, I've never looked at it from this view. So I'm standing here. Patricia's about the only one that's ever understood that about me. You know, I've been out back and I'll just go stand on something and look and be like, all right, I just never looked at the backyard from over here.
Yeah, and it's something as simple as that. It's, yeah, you go sitting on the, you know, if in Air, you know, in Arizona, you got all those 6-foot privacy walls in the back fence.
That's what I would stand on.
You know, and you stand on that, or you sit on it, and you go, things look different from up here.
Yeah.
It's the same shit you looked at every day.
Same shit.
But it's just a different view, a point of view. And I think when we start to look at everything from a different point of view, from somebody else's point of view, from, you know, from the people that we can't fucking stand's point of view, and you validate their viewpoint,
their right to that perception,
you know, you can disagree with it all you want, but validating another person's view, validating their emotions around it, will create a better connection, even if you can't stand their viewpoint. Than anything else. I was in a Rob Bell event years ago, and he was talking about how no matter what everybody's been through, he goes, you give me the most liberal and the most conservative. You give them both with a child who's struggling with cancer and put them in the same room, and there's community.
Mm.
And so he did this thing. He goes, did you, it was like an almost did you ever kind of a thing. And everybody wrote stuff on a piece of paper. And he's like, all right, have you ever, you know, lost a parent or this? And you kind of traded pieces of paper around the auditorium. And by the end, you realize that no matter how diverse we are in ethnicity, in opinion, in viewpoints, in worldviews, that there's something that connects us all as humanity. And we lose sight of that because we get so focused on what makes us different that we lose focus on what makes us the same. And in numbers, we're much more powerful than alone.
Yeah.
And I think there's, I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat for a second. I'm not one for tinfoil hats, but I got to put one on here for just a quick second. I think there's a definitive effort to keep people divided. Because I think they realize that when the people get together, the power, when they realize the power they have, which is, you know, was the rise of unions, you know, for a very simplistic viewpoint about it, you know, people rose and bonded together to say, hey, we don't want to work 18 hours a day. We think we earn, you know, should earn more money to actually shop at stores and not things that the company owns and not be killed for having a different, you know, thinking that,
yeah,
you know, that, there's, Where the hell was I going?
Oh, you were going deep about the rise of the change.
Yeah,
of a
yeah,
group.
Yeah. When humanity gets together, the world improves. But I think there's,
but there's no money in unity.
Exactly. There's no money in unity. There's no there and people who have power and people who have money and position and prestige don't like to give it up very easily.
Yeah, that's why I laugh.
It has to be taken. So when it's funny when I hear all these, you know, oh, you know, you guys in the resist or this and that, you know, you just want this or that. Or there, it's like, well, freaking yeah,
yeah.
You know, it's not a zero sum game. There's not a finite amount of everything. Mm-hmm. It can expand, and once you realize you bring those without into the crowd, everything expands, and everybody has more.
It's hard for so much to see because we tell our kids, right? Be the individual, be yourself, right? Like, I'm quoting the movie Aladdin there, right? When it comes to be yourself, right? I don't know why that popped in my head, but you know, we push that, right?
My daughters used to think I looked like Aladdin when I had longer hair. I used to have hair down to here.
I don't see it, but I always focus on Jasmine anyway. But it makes me a sexist probably. I don't know. And I'll get a progressive email.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? If you're not pissing anybody off, you're not doing anything worth doing. So
I would agree. I used to tell my clients and my patients, if you don't say fuck you to me once a week, I'm not doing my job.
That's right.
If you're just sitting there going, oh, thanks, I appreciate it. I'm terrible as a therapist.
Yeah. You know, if you're not pissing people off, you're not making enough noise.
Agreed, man. But you know, we sell the individual, be yourself, right? Or you are the individual. I agree with you that we really lost sight of that group. And when we wear the labels or whatever team we belong to, it separates us even further. It's hard, I think. It's, you know, I tell people, can you even imagine, do you think the system in place can even fix the system in place? And most people are like, no.
No.
I'm like, well, then you're not a Democrat. You're not a Republican. You're not a liberal. You're a fucking radical. And the truth is you're really a radical. And that's kind of on a political scale, yeah. Right?
Who is it? Zizek said, it's easier for humanity to come up with apocalyptic end of the world movies because it's easier to imagine the end of the world than changing the system that the world currently exists in.
I couldn't fucking shit. No shit. It is. We can sit back and go, yeah, that book said it. That book said it. I see it.
I mean, it's so much easier to end. And you see it, you know, in popular media, you see all these end of the world things. But when you challenge the system that is in place, and humanity always moves forward when you challenge the system in place. I mean, it just over and over and over, you know, from feudalism to you got the Dark Ages and the Renaissance, and everything changes when the status quo is challenged. And the status quo is very, very, very powerful. A lot of people don't like it. They don't like don't challenge me. Don't challenge my worldview. You know, and I'm one of those people that says, you know, things have got to change. And the way things are, there's some good things, but a lot of things suck ass.
Yeah. I mean, I also still talk about it is, I'm probably getting shit for this, but anyway,
I'm sure you and I both were because, you know, they said, hey, we're going live on Cognitive Rampage. And next thing you know, I'm going to get fucking emails going, oh, you goddamn communist.
Yeah, probably. You'll go from a rocket maker to a socialist.
Yeah.
Real quick. You know, I would say that some people do just, right, focus on their family, their proximity, right, and they're doing good for their family, right? I go to work every day. I got a college fund for them. You know, I'm doing all the right things. When truly, we're not trying to change anything, that you're just adding to the same system. And in the long run, you're really not changing a fucking – you're not helping at all.
No. And changing the system takes work and in this
short, in all of us.
Yeah. And right now we're in short attention span theater.
Yeah. We all have the attention span of a fucking gnat.
Like we were talking about at the beginning, all that shit at the top, you know, it's a mile wide and an inch deep.
Well, it's true, man. I mean, I find myself with the attention span of a gnat. I'm over here. I'm over here. And I'm like, I'm focusing on this.
I mean, I saw a breaking news alert the other day about the Kardashian family. Oh yeah. Look, they're all pregnant. It's like, you know, my thought is, who cares? It's like, congratulations. You're famous because your dad defended OJ.
Yeah. And then she made a sex tape with a B rapper, a B status rapper.
Yeah. And that's it. It's like,
hell of a business plan.
Pretty damn easy too.
But. Right, right. I mean, but is that people though? Is that because it distracts us, right? It takes you out of it. There's a great line I love that Tyrion Lannister says in Game of Thrones, where he's walking with the young queen and she's appalled by the homeless person or the person not as rich who smells or whatever. And she's appalled. And then he looks at her and goes, people are shunned away from them because they remind us of who we really are. Beneath the perfume, beneath the clothes, that's who we really are. And people shun that away and they turn on it. And so could some of that really just be going, they don't want to pay attention to how fucked it is. They don't want to pay attention. They don't think they can do about it, right? They call it gravity problems. I can't do anything anyway. This is all it's going to be. So let's just make the best of it.
Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And I will be the first to say I'm one of the four people on the planet who's never watched an episode of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm an outcast and that
it's the little person. I see. Yep. I got the PC. It's
but
the
I did see and actually, I think I actually did a show on a quote that I saw, but I'm tired of reading of, was it adventures or accomplishments of greater men than me?
Yeah.
From that.
Dude, that's why I changed my podcast. Everybody was fucking interviewing the same people. It's like a circuit. They all get on the circuit. Everyone's trying to book them. And it's them going, yeah, I was homeless. I lived in the back of my car. Now I'm worth a shitload of fucking money. Yeah,
I made $11 jillion in 6 seconds. And look at me.
That's it. And it became this repetitive fucking podcast of everybody saying.
And you see it in the ads that you see scroll by on Facebook. It's you know when somebody releases something new because all of a sudden your feed is filled with like, hey, this is the next greatest thing.
Yep.
It's like it was like when Russell Brunson came out with ClickFunnels.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a great product. I think it makes it really simple to create those sorts of things. I mean, I have no hard feelings towards that. I mean, it's because funnels can suck.
Truth
but it
told.
Was all of a sudden it was everybody was promoting ClickFunnels. But I was reading his book, Expert Secrets. I was at a conference a few months ago, and they gave everybody a copy of the book. And it's a really great book. It talks about how to build your story and kind of create a manifesto of, it doesn't matter what you do of who you are and why you do it.
Yeah.
To set yourself apart.
Like a life philosophy, a personal life philosophy.
Yeah. It's been a really interesting read. That one, I think Jensen Chero's, You Are a Badass.
Yeah.
It's a fucking awesome book.
Yeah. You like
that one? I had that on audiobook and I think I've listened to it about 19 times.
You like that one? I was going to ask you, what's one of your favorite books you've read recently?
Oh yeah. Go after your dreams with the tenacity of a dateless cheerleader a week before prom. I mean, come on, and there's nothing more unstoppable than a freight train full of fuck. Yeah. I mean, that is awesome advice.
You're getting emails. Yeah. I wanted to grab into it, but I think once I got kind of deeper into the study of the mind, human behavior, psychology, how it all affects us, I got beyond the Tony Robbins bullshit. I got beyond the Eric Thomas fluff, to where they say the stuff, it sounds good, you're motivated, you're like, yeah, it doesn't fucking mean anything.
Yeah.
What I mean? For me, it was hard for me to grasp onto that.
Yeah, it was, I had a quote from Jim Carrey. When I first decided to start to break out from and look at getting out of what I was doing as the rocket scientist, I joined a network marketing group, and it was focused on personal development. A guy named Brent Payne, and it was a great program called Avant. I still have the book and the CDs. It's some really great shit in there. And there's a quote by Jim Carrey in one of the lessons that talks about visualization is great, but it's not everything. You can't be hungry and just visualize yourself a sandwich and be full. Actually got to get up and do the fucking work.
Carrey said that.
Yeah.
Jim, well, I'm glad because he's really known for the guy who like put the check on his fridge and just visualized that cashing that check in a year and got it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on, man. Yeah. But at least he said that.
But yeah, he may have done that, but it also made it real to him that it drove him to actually go in and put in the work.
Hmm.
And go in and go to the auditions and fail 11 billion times and fall on his face and keep getting better and keep, you know, working on his weaknesses until the point that all of a sudden he's like, all righty then. Well, you know, he's
the fire marshal Bill shit paid off.
He's a household name.
Yeah, he's the shit.
Because, you know, he busted his ass to get to where he is.
You saw all those videos, right? They came out where they thought he was losing his mind and shit like that.
Oh, yeah.
But he's just, you know, he's just doing it for a movie role.
Yeah.
Now, that I actually had somebody look at me when I was like, you know, they put out he's doing a movie role for a comedian, actor, person that loses his mind. And they were like, oh, now that the videos make sense. And then somebody was like, nah, they made that shit up. Somebody's writing a script right now to try to come with some bullshit because his PR numbers are dropping from what he's saying. And I was like, but he is that guy, man. I mean, he put in some work. I mean, he is a household.
He is. And if you've ever watched his one of his commencement speeches, it's on YouTube, and it's a really great thing.
He's got the whole hat on and the garb, the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's a really great speech, and it kind of lays everything out in front of him. If you have the opportunity to fail, so why not fail greatly?
Yeah.
Instead of fail at mediocrity.
Yeah. But we rationalize it, man. Like I can hear because I mean, people talk to me and myself, right? Well, but the kids, but we live there and the bill, it's my insurance. That's where I get my medical insurance. I mean, I wouldn't be able, so I have to do that. And then somehow they switch the narrative of what I do for my life is about sacrifice for others, and they become the martyr and they turn that story. You know what I mean? That it's, what about that and this, right? The chase your dreams thing, right? Till you don't. What if somebody doesn't have any dreams? What if they're just fine, right? Being the 9 to 5 or checking in, checking out.
And you know what? To be honest, if you're fine being, and I see all these people talking about, a lot of these network marketers and entrepreneurs going, oh, you don't want to be stuck in the JOB just over broke. And I'm like, you're being kind of a dick when you say that.
Yes,
because there are people that love what they do. They love,
and they're better than me. I put that out there. You're a 9 to 5er. You're way better than me, brother. I can't do it. You're stronger than me.
Yeah, you're better at your job than I could ever possibly be. You love it. You do it, and the world fucking needs people who go out and do the 9 to 5 and do the shit.
Yeah,
not everybody is built to be an entrepreneur. Not everybody is built to go on their own.
Well, I think a lot of those people are strong too because they don't define themselves by what they do. They just do something. And when they're not doing that, they're actually being alive.
Yeah. And I think, and we're kind of shifting into where us guys kind of lose ourselves is.
Well, what's the first thing on any dating question? What do you do?
What do you do? Yep. You meet another guy. What do?
That's it.
And it's the definition. It's like, it's like when we met, it's like, what do you do? I do this. I'm an engineer, but I also do this. It's like,
sometimes you get the guy or the girl, whatever that's what they do, but that's all they talk about.
Yeah.
When you're like, dude, like that's what you do, but talk about life and other things than other than what you do.
And I think,
but it's defining, right? Our society, as the man you provide, it's what you do. Here's what I make, right? Here's my dating profile. You know what I mean? That's what it's like.
Yeah. And growing up, Gen X, we saw that's, my grandfather. It's like, what is your grandfather? Oh, he was a tool and die guy. Yeah. He wanted to work in dentistry. That's what he wanted to do. That's what he did a little bit when he was in, serving in World War II. But I never knew that until long after he passed. Mm. My grandfather was always a tool and die guy. That's what he did. Well,
until you woke up, brother, you were a tool and die guy, just a much bigger tool.
Yeah. And I think coming societally through the way society has evolved and guys being the, men being the providers and we're in this epoch of change. And the way things are kind of looking, guys themselves are struggling to figure out what our place in the world is, because we're learning that we're no longer living to work and we're working to live, but we don't know who we are anymore. Mm. Because the question is always, what do you do? Mm. Oh, I'm an engineer. Oh, I'm an accountant. Oh, I'm doing this. I've done this for X number of years. And so even I still struggle with that when people, what do you do? And it's like, sometimes they go, I do this. And other times I go, what do you do? It's like, I like to sit on my ass and watch Netflix for a few hours.
Right, nobody says that, right? They start selling you immediately.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do? I was in a rock band for a while, you know, and played for hours, and you know, one show got electrocuted by a microphone.
Well, nobody. Well, who puts the worst foot forward, right? They're like, "Hi, nice to meet you. I have this problem. I have an issue with them. This is really, you know."
Yeah, and I think the more we as men learn to understand that we're not defined by what we do for a salary.
And that are we defined by what we do for our family?
I think that is a way we should move towards. I think we're defined by what we do to, and you know, I've seen some of your stuff about impacting the world and that sort of thing. But I think the more we're defined by the things that bring us joy, the things that bring joy into existence, the better providers will be,
Maybe we're hiding behind that. Maybe we're
hiding behind our titles. We're hiding behind our business cards.
Bam. You know, and so we say, hey, look, I'm sorry I can't be there as a dad. I got to fly this weekend, but hey, have fun on that volleyball tournament. Or
yeah, I'm putting in 50 hours a week doing X, Y, or Z.
I provide. Because I do this, man, and you're right. So we hide behind the existence rather than being the dad, being there, or the mom even, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever pronoun, suppose you, I don't know.
And breaking from that, especially for us guys, because that's what we've learned from, you know, it's almost genetic now that we're the providers.
Yeah.
And we value ourselves and we determine our worth by how well we provide. And so that's why we bust our asses. That's why we work 50, 60 hours a week. And then,
you know, we should redefine what we provide.
Yeah. And right? Then comes a day where, I'm going to be 45 this year. And
I forget how old I am still. Like I literally have to count, and I'm like,
I have to do that time occasionally too.
Yeah, I don't think I give a shit anymore.
I don't either. But you know, and it's like, you know, I think the more you bring, the more you create, the more you're able to create in this world, whether it's music or art or whatever it is.
Yeah,
I think that helps expand humanity's consciousness. You know, we're destined to be creators. You know, and it's like I said the other day on the thing, in a world of conformists, being an original is a completely subversive act. You know, and now everybody, I bitch about music all the damn time.
Oh,
I really do.
I bet you love the music I was playing before I got on.
No, that was awesome because that was original. That was unique. That was, you know,
except the riff from James Taylor.
Yeah, but you know, it was a different thing. You know, now everything's auto-tuned, and you know, we watch things like The Voice where it's all carbon copies of the same, you know, the same female voices, the same male voices.
They hold that shit where they're all like,
and they do this thing with the microphone, and it's like, what are you waving at? Yeah. Hi, I see you too.
That's funny, man. I do wish I could fucking sing though.
But you know,
I got a few talents, and if I could fucking sing, dude, I would just sing at people. I wouldn't talk. I'd be on the podcast like,
I fucking nice sing at people anyway.
Yeah, just for fun. Too. I guess I do. Or I'll sing to myself, but man, I wish I could sing.
You know, people come into my office, and I often have Pandora playing because I got in my lab. It's like one of the quiet spaces in the shop, and people come in and say, "Oh, you got music in here?" It's like, yeah. It's like, what you got? And like, some days it's Sinatra and Dean Martin. Some days it's Johnny Cash. Some days, you know, if I'm feeling really just kind of pumped up, it's Girl Power Friday. So it's, you know, the Selena Gomez, the Katy Perry's and, you know, the Britney Spears.
You're on your own there, man. You're on your own.
But you know what?
I'm a man.
There are sometimes.
You see where I'm leading you in there?
Sometimes it's just.
Do you have that song that you sing that you, I realized this like maybe last year, a couple of years ago, when I realized a mood that I get in, if I'm like really happy and joyful, I start singing a song. I don't even mean to. And I didn't notice it for after a while. Is there a song that you like just start singing out loud?
Oh yeah. It's Sinatra.
So's mine.
It's I Get a Kick Out of You.
Okay. Well, all right.
I get no kicks from champagne.
You're on your own.
Keep going. Your alcohol doesn't thrill me at all.
For me, it's Sinatra Summer Wind. I'm walking around like the summer wind
come blowing.
Yeah. And if I noticed
across the room,
last time I was singing that, I was crossing Oklahoma. You know what I mean? So I was like, I noticed that's the song. How the fuck did we get here?
Yeah. It's just exactly. I know. It's like, we're going to go back and watch this podcast and go, oh my God, I think I've lost about 30 minutes into it.
We've circled back though. We've basically hit everything, but we were talking, really what we started talking about at the event when we started chatting was that evolution, right? To the new man, whatever that is, the definition that,
absolutely,
that breakaway, right? And you know, I'm the first one to tell you, you know, I don't want to say I wear my emotions on my sleeve, but it's so fucking cliche. But for the most part, I'm not afraid to bust a tear out. I am not afraid. I used to be, you know, my daughter she'd make a joke sometimes if a tear would show up.
Oh, dad daughter commercials. I'm a mess.
At first I wasn't. It became a joke for a while. My daughter would go get a little vial and she would go like, oh shit, get that thing. We don't ever see that. You know,
collect that.
That's it. And she would, you know, and the truth is, you know, we talked in the beginning about connection coming from vulnerability, from being able to be open. And so many men, man, our society pressures, whatever you want to call it, right? I mean, our childhood experiences, our father impressions, our community, whatever it is. We're taught so much, really, that you can't be afraid. You can't be hurt. You're not allowed to be scared. You can't ever purge or have tears. You have to have this tough pull together thing. And there's so many men, dude, that
suck
are
it
not
up and rub some dirt on it.
That's it. And then you just become the fucking martyr. Now you're just the one who sacrificed it all. And that's it.
Absolutely.
And like, you're not a human being. And the truth is if you show that, you're really actually helping your kid. You're teaching that. And so many men, though, they're not really willing to look at themselves and go, where did I learn to do that, right? Well, my daddy never, and my grandfather never, my granddaddy, right? We just stay in the same routine when truly in the world that we live in, man, to remain as if nothing harms you, right? The stoic, I don't need to talk much. I'm a coal miner's man, you know?
Yeah.
That's gone. And that's not fucking reality. Probably the reason men die earlier.
Absolutely. It's why, you know, what is it? The last number is what? 6 million of us struggle with depression. It's why men my age are the demographic with the highest rate of suicide.
Fuck.
Men in the middle age from 35 to 45.
Yeah. Add veteran to that. Add non-provider. Add all the, I don't perform well. Yeah.
And as we're really young boys, you know, we have buddies, we can tell them everything and we hang out. But starting as we start getting into adolescence is when things change. It's when that masculinity thing starts kicking in and we've got to be the tough guy and, you know, the rub some dirt on it and men don't cry. And we hear, I was never a big sports guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I was, oh, here's another bullet point. I was, big surprise, big fucking nerd growing up. Tested into kindergarten early.
Mm-hmm. You tested into kindergarten? I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, you normally have to be 5 years old. I was four when I started kindergarten because my birthday's in November. So I started a few months early into kindergarten. So I was 4 years old.
I was a little book school in Pine Hills, man. Give my hand slap. And little book school, shout out to, I forget, the Books mom and daughter. That was her last name, Miss Books. This little ghetto ass preschool in Pine Hills. This is what they did. It was a Christian book school, if you will, you know. And if you had a Bible verse every day, right? You didn't come back the next day and say the Bible verse. If you got the Bible verse right, they gave you a whole fucking peanut, like one fucking peanut. If you attempted the verse and had one or two sentences, fucking bitches cut the peanut in half. Bitch handed me a half a peanut. I was like, what? And I'd be so happy to get a half a peanut. You know what I mean? This was like Miss Books.
I got
Christmas.
Some of the words.
That's it, man. And the shitty part is if you didn't attempt or know anything, they would paddle your hand and they take you the thing and slap you on the hand with this little. I'm like, what the fuck? How the hell did we get on Little Miss Books pool? That's right. You tested into kindergarten.
Yeah. So I was a smart kid. Yeah. And speaking about getting smacked on the hands is a shout out to a lot of my Michigan friends. Yes. Those of you that you remember going to catechism in St. Angela's growing up and getting smacked around for not knowing your prayers, but.
Oh, Catholic school, man.
First grade. I was, you know, being such an uber nerd like I am. And I was always that if you read my yearbooks, it's always like to the really smart kid
who's going to fucking change the world and build rockets.
And it took me years to accept that to be who I was, because I didn't want to be just the smart kid.
What'd you want to be?
I wanted, because the smart kid was that kind of the outcast, the nerd.
Sure.
I wanted to be popular.
Dude, I hid the fact I was in chess club. You know what I mean?
I was athlete. I love that you were in chess club. I was a stage crew. I was a band geek in high school. But in first grade, I absorb information at an incredible rate. Always have. And so I'd blast through my work, and my teacher wrote a note, said, he's working too fast. It's too sloppy. So it slowed down. It's like, oh, he's working too slow. And finally my parents was like, just let him do what he wants.
Yeah.
And so I worked through that. I get to second grade. My second grade teacher didn't believe in such a thing as a gifted student. You got to remember.
Now that's still early. That's progressive.
You got to remember this is like 1978.
She's way progressive.
So she didn't believe in such a thing as a gifted student. And actually my mom, with a group of parents and other teachers, formed the very first gifted students program at Forest Park Elementary in East Detroit, Michigan.
You upgraded to Mesa.
Yeah. Rainbows Unlimited or something like that? I don't know.
You couldn't use that name today.
No. And
you see a whole culture that hijacked the rainbow.
So I blew through second grade, and it was, and I still remember this conversation from my day. They said, all right, we're not going to send you to third grade because you're going to be bored and you've obviously got the aptitude of moving forward. So we're going to skip you straight to fourth.
Whoa, what the fuck? You went from K to fourth?
I went from second to fourth, not K to fourth.
Oh, shit. I was like, all right.
So I skipped third grade.
I wouldn't have had Miss Clark's class.
But right? I remember the principal going, if you get anything less than C's, we're sending you back. And so that always stuck with me. It wasn't always,
you're the shit.
It was like, don't fuck up or we're going to kick your ass.
What the fuck? Instead of the encouraging to learn and grow.
That always stuck in the back of my head growing up.
Perform
or else. And going through school, it was always, even though, my parents were big on grades, not really, it wasn't, and so it was always a perform or else kind of a thing. And I swore when I was a parent that I wasn't going to be that way. I was going to be like, you know what? Just give your best effort. And I learned that actually in the Navy. Said, you just do the best you can do, and that's all anybody can expect of you. If you do your best and you still fall on your face, we'll get you all the help you need. We'll lift you up. We'll do whatever. If you don't do the best you need, you kind of fuck off, you're on your own. Mm. And so I instilled that in my kids. It was never about grades. It was about effort and how you carried yourself and how you approach the things you did.
Yeah.
Because the outcome isn't as important as what you put into it.
Mm.
So
many focus on the outcome.
Yeah. And focusing on the outcome is, I think, screwing up a lot of kids today, which is, and I think social media is screwing up a lot of kids today because it's all about, you see Instagram and Snapchat and everybody's got all these perfect fucking lives and,
yeah.
And so you end up with these.
Well, focusing on the outcome makes you forget the experience.
Yeah, and you suffer from comparison, fatigue, and you realize. And I think there's this whole split now between parents and children that they see these things on social media and they're like, "Well, how come I don't have that?" And it's like you don't realize that's not real.
Yeah,
that's filters, and everybody's got issues.
Yeah.
And so I graduated high school at 16 years old.
Damn.
First semester of college, 16 years old.
Doing it.
Yeah. So after a year and a half, I was like, I don't think I'm ready for this. And that's when I dropped out of college and joined the Navy. And, the whole story goes on from there. But being the nerd kid and it was all performer else, that was something that
you really were an athlete. It's the same idea. Because growing up as the athlete, I was seen nothing as but the athlete. Now, mind you, I had to put on a false arrogance about how I felt. Meanwhile, my home is violent and abusive, and I'm walking around trying to be like, no, everything's fine. I'm great. But the athlete goes to that same idea. It's perform or else. If I don't perform as the linebacker or whatever, well, then I don't have an identity. So if I don't perform at the party, if I don't beat up that kid, if I don't drink that many beers, right? If I don't sleep with that girl, right? If I don't tackle that many tackles, well, then my performance determines my value. Hell, let me miss the tackle at fourth and one and the other team wins and I come to practice on Monday. Holy shit. I'm getting ripped in the newspaper. I'm getting ripped at home. I'm getting ripped by the coaches. I'm getting ripped by my team. So it was still then, it was perform or else. Because the minute you don't perform, well, you lose the title. You're not that person anymore.
Yeah, and look at us now as grown men.
Perform.
And that's yeah.
Here I am performing. Hello, I've learned nothing.
Yeah, well, that's where a lot of guys base their identity on. And especially as everything is changing now. And, you know, especially, you know, my generation, you know, Gen X and everything, seeing everything going from, you know, you used to be able to work one job till you retire to now it's like everybody jumps every couple of years.
Dude, you can't live in the same city that long. We're like NBA players.
Yeah.
Man. One year we're on this team.
There's no such thing as, you know, as really as employer loyalty anymore. And it's all about the bottom line. And if you're not, you know, if you're not providing that, then you're just kind of, you know, dead weight.
Well, then you go on social media and he goes, if you have a 9-to-5, you're not following your dreams and you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, you got that too, which is like, you know, I don't fucking think so because, you know what, for some people, I mean, like I said, I'm really good at my job and there are times when I really, really enjoy it. But I also understand that doing, launching this coaching thing that I started at the beginning of the year was because I got sick and tired of seeing guys who were living to work. Hmm. You know, guys that would, the guys that would stay late and go, oh, I got to get this done. And you realize, you know, it's going to be there tomorrow. There's going to be another
list. How many of them just didn't want to go home? You know what I mean? How many of them were just in that relationship? They didn't give a fuck.
Not very many of them that I've run across. It's they were so convinced that their value was tied in with what they did, that they were undervaluing their contribution at home. And understanding that is a much more valuable contribution because what they're teaching their children as far as relationships and marriage and career and
can't take impact, that back.
You know, their kids are growing up seeing, okay, well, if I want to be successful, then I've got to spend 70 hours a week at the office. I've got to miss, you know, my kids, you know, recitals and shit like that.
That means I care.
Yeah, that means I care because I'm working to make sure that they can do those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, or buy them this or buy them that. And one of the things that I've learned over the last decade or so is that it's all about experiences. You know, we rarely fly anywhere as a family unless we have to be somewhere in a short term.
When did that change? After you drove across the country
to
Florida?
And it's because we enjoy driving across the country to see things that people don't see anymore. And we stop at all the little, you know, I've got my Bucky's t-shirt from Bucky's Rest Stop in Texas, you know. I've been to the little shithole museums in the middle of Texas that, you know, you walk in, it's like, oh, there's somebody's high school diorama and some guy's pen collection. And that's like, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that sort of experience that we miss in this high pace, got to get everywhere, got to get everything.
The checklist. I've been there. We've traveled here. We've done this. Yeah. We've done that. Check.
Yeah. You know, when we moved out here, we stopped. We came across the Mississippi River and we stopped and we pulled over in Mississippi and got out of the car and said, look, this is that big blue line that you see on the map. This is the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
You know, here's a giant magnolia tree. Here's, you know, this is the shit that you read about in books.
Yeah.
Experience it and understand it. And my hope is, my belief is that someday, even though they may not appreciate it now, someday all my kids will look back and go, you know, my dad at one time, he took us all to Hawaii. We got to go to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
We saw the King Kamehameha statue, you know. We got the, you know, my oldest was like, I got sunburned as fuck on Waikiki. You know, growing up, my parents went to Hawaii a few times for anniversaries and stuff. It never took us kids. And so when I had the opportunity to go, I made sure to take my kids with me because it was something that I didn't get, you know, my parents weren't able to do. And so being able to take my kids to Hawaii and to have that experience for them is meant more to me than, you know, the incredible amount of money it cost me to do. But you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah. You know what? What's got me a lot with our society has, I did a few videos on it, is marketers for me, I wrote this whole thing in college about how marketing was the end of human civilization as we knew it. And like once that was invented, the psyche was done. And the idea that the marketers for me, if you watch commercials or see them, I haven't seen them in a while, but when you do, that's who spent all the money on the research, the market research, or somebody wants to see. And they've gotten really smart that they now sell the idea that they know that we're not trying to buy shit anymore. We're not trying to buy stuff anymore.
Yeah.
So now, but they've gotten really good at going, get the experience in life. But every experience I've heard about in the United States costs fucking money.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, all my daughter's college brochures, you know, they come and I did a little study where I was reading through them and I was kind of taking pictures of and just research. And I was going, every fucking college brochure was selling my daughter and myself the college experience. It wasn't about the education, the job placement, the reason you take on this much debt to get none of that.
No, it was all about the experience. So where you go and the town you live in and the, you know, and go into the, let's go to the football games on Saturdays and the basketball games during the, you know, basketball season.
Mm-hmm. They've gotten good at coercing us to go, okay, you want the experience? We'll sell you that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you, it's hard to define, right, where that line is of where the experience is or even where we're going, hey, we've created the experience, therefore I am a provider. I have provided the experience, right, instead of the time of the moment. It's really hard and confusing to separate, you know, what's the social impact or the social constructs that are shaping me to think that I'm creating what I'm supposed to do. Now I'm getting deep, right? And what really means something. We assign meaning to what we want. It's just, I don't know. I'm wary of anybody really that tells me they have the answer.
Yeah, I don't think I do. I
don't know.
Have you ever watched, what was it, Dogma?
Oh, wow.
Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah. Son of a bitch. Yep. People right now are yelling like, motherfucker, it's this movie.
Yeah.
If we only had a device that we could search everything.
And there's a great line from Chris Rock in the movie. He talks about, he goes, people will die for beliefs, but having an idea, that changes the world.
Damn sure does. Yeah. And you have to pay for it.
I don't believe I have a good idea. And even if you read, it's funny when people talk about, you know, well, the Bible says this and you know, and I go, if you go back and you read about the first council of Jerusalem in Acts, even the apostles, the ones who hung out supposedly with Jesus, came out with this letter and said, well, we're not sure, but we think we got a good idea that these are the things that are kind of important. Everything else, and not so much.
Yeah.
And so I think if we approach life from an idea that we don't know, but we've got a good idea going forward, it's always open to change. It's always open to making things better. It's open to shifting the trajectory, because I'm very Hegel in my beliefs. I believe there's, you know, thesis, antithesis, and then the truth is somewhere in the middle.
If there's in it.
If there is. But you know what? I think the world shifts better when you realize that when you realize it's somewhere between the two extremes. Because it always shifts, it always changes, and I honestly believe that the arc of the arc of history bends towards justice. You may not see it, but I think as history has proven, and we've moved forward as a society, we've become a more fair and just society, and a lot more inclusive. Even though we've got a long freaking way to go, you know, you look back 50 years ago. I mean, it was just in the 80s when the last the law was repealed in Louisiana that prevented women from getting their own banking accounts, you know, their own credit cards, and that was, you know, 30 years ago. And so things change.
It's weird to think about that we're a part of the generation that's just beyond the monkey. You know, yeah, what I mean? Just beyond the chimpanzee, right? We're just beyond that. And some of us don't want to believe that, that we're just a little bit behind.
We're so evolved. No, not really.
No. We still pick the guy who has the most money.
You're like 3 seconds away from 12 o'clock.
Yeah. He runs faster. He's our leader. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's taller. He's our leader.
Yeah.
We're barely away from that.
We are barely away from that. And I think if, as long as we keep that perspective that we are barely aware from that, and we keep moving towards that, and we keep trying to realize that, you know, like you said, we're all just fucking monkeys on a rock spinning around space.
That's Joe, man. Joe Rogan.
And get that sort of humility of understanding of our place in the universe.
I love that line, dude. We're a bunch of monkeys, or he didn't say monkeys. We're a bunch of chimpanzees on a spinning rock in space, and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. We step away from that arrogance and thinking that we are the shit and we're the ultimate of, you know, evolution or existence and everything, and realize that, you know, we're the Alabama of the universe.
I think that's where we end this shit, man. We're the Alabama of the universe. Shout out to everybody in Alabama. Right. No disrespect. I love that shit. That's, dude, put everybody out there for your podcast where they find it, where they listen to it.
Absolutely. Swing by secondlifecoaching.com. The podcast is on iTunes. Just Google 21st Century Man. We're on Google we're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, wherever you listen to podcasts. You know, we talk about this sort of shit all the time and just kind of just lay it bare, talk about what it means to be a guy in the 21st century and how it's not like it used to be and how we're glad it's not. So,
well, brother, you kept my attention. I was captivated the whole time, man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time and having me on this show. I watch your shit and it's just blows me away.
Now I have my moments,
being on the same wavelength.
I have my moments. That's what I love to tell people. Just moments of insanity that happen to sound sane from time to time.
Absolutely.
Because last I heard, we're just a bunch of chimps on the rock spinning
around the world and nobody's talking about us.
Except us, man. Except us, brother.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the website again, man, to find you.
Secondlifecoaching.com. You can find the podcast and everything else there. It's all there for you.
Beautiful. So when's the book coming out? Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be a completely another show, because that's a whole another story and another couple of hours of fun stuff that we'll talk about. But
I know the book will come out soon, man. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just putting you on the spot.
We got one in the works about dealing with estranged relationships with your kids, and then I'm working on another one about being a 21st century guy and redefining manhood. So,
and that's what the podcast is all about, right?
Yep.
Yeah, oh, dude, I love it, man. Thanks for, dude, coming on. What's cool, man, is we met for 10 minutes at a networking event. You say hello. Now you're at the house. We're chatting. Got to know each other. We barely talked for maybe 5 minutes out back.
And then you're like, we got to go get the shit on air.
Yeah, let's go live now before we say anything, man. So I appreciate you sharing your life and sharing everything here, man.
I appreciate you having me. It's been a blast.
I love it, man. I appreciate everybody listening, man. Have a good weekend. Love you. Next week, I'm gonna fuck his name up, but he's coming on, the CEO, founder, I want to say it's Jove Red Light Therapy, JOOVV. All the questions about red light therapy, why to do it. Tons of athletes are doing it, like Jeremy Stevens and on. He's an MMA fighter, by the way, but he'll be on. Dr. Parker Mott, your backcountry psychologist. Everybody loves him. I think after this one, he will have been on the podcast more than anybody. But Dr. Parker Mott will be on next Tuesday. Adam's Rampage notes are already full. It's been 3 days. I'm going to come back on. And also Dr. Stanton Peel is now booked. Jill Wheeler is now booked. Go back. She was episode 66, an amazing woman. Can't wait to talk to her. Dr. Stanton Peel, I skipped over him, though, but he's a hero to me. 14, I think, books out now, 15 books he's been fighting. Yeah, fighting chemical incarceration. He made first one to fight AA, NA, the inconsistencies of it, how well it doesn't work. Dr. Stan Peel's a hero to me, man. And
you and I could live stream for like 24 hours and never run out of things to say.
Probably. So he's coming back on. Jason Silva is also coming on the podcast. He's agreed. He's traveling a little bit right now, but we're going to line up with Silva at the end. And one surprise guest that I'm not telling a fucking soul about until he actually shows the fuck up and comes on. But somebody I can't wait to have on the podcast. But love y'all. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you live in your cognitive rampage. Yep.
Have a great weekend, all. It was great to get the time to chit-chat with you. And thanks for listening to this kind of bullshit for I don't even know how long it was.
Love you.
Love you.